Hello, this is Dave with the News Gazette for November 22nd, Sunday. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the latest on Restore Illinois Phase 4, Day 196, by the numbers. Illinois Impact. Champaign County reports 16th, 17th deaths of November. 12 of 59 hospitalized at Carl Urbana in ICU. Men in their 70s and 80s became the 44th and 45th Champaign County residents to lose their lives to COVID-19. November has been the deadliest month of the pandemic locally, with 17 fatalities. 12 of the 59 COVID-19 patients at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana on Saturday were in intensive care. That's twice as many as 3 days earlier, when 6 of 69 were in the ICU. 7-day positivity rates were down statewide for the third time in 4 days, and in Region 6 for the first time this month. At 8.2%, Moultrie has the lowest rate of the 21 counties in Region 6, 14.5%. Champaign County towns outside CU with the most active cases: Rantoul with 124, minus 8 overnight; Mahomet 92 with plus 7; St. Joseph 46, plus 4; Tolono 42, no change; Savoy 32, down 4; and Gifford 18, down 3. Piatt County added 115 cases between Sunday and Friday, with 53 in Monticello, 18 in Cerro Gordo, 11 in Bement, and 7 in both Atwood and White Heath. The next article on the front page is titled, "A Sunday Special, A Life Remembered." Geriante Brown. He would have made a great mentor. Family, community hit hard after Champaign's latest senseless killing, by Anthony Zilas. Champaign. Of all the students Darren O'Connell worked with in his time at Edison Middle School, Geriante Brown might have been the one he thought of most. As dean of students, O'Connell's interactions didn't always begin positively, but he couldn't keep a stern face with Geriante. It was one of those things where he could almost get away with it because of who he was and how much fun he was, said O'Connell, who was dean during Geriante's 7th and 8th grade years. There was even a time when he showed up with a half pint of ice cream and I was like, "Dude, you can't have ice cream in your locker," O'Connell said. He's like, "Why not?" I'm like, "It's going to melt, for one." And he's like, "Give me a spoon so I can eat it." And I think I gave him a spoon and let him come in my office and eat it. He would do stuff he wasn't supposed to do, but then it would become a funny moment, and we would just kind of roll with it. Geriante's smile and sense of humor had a way of making people laugh, even when they began the conversation angry at him. When he was in third grade, his mother was worried he'd lose confidence in that smile, and when he fell in a skating accident and chipped a top front tooth. It only made him more endearing. If you see a picture of him, just seeing him smile, you would know this was a happy kid, said his mother, Latesha Lee. While O'Connell said Geriante, like a lot of kids, struggled in the traditional classroom setting, he was always eager to stay at school and volunteer to help set up for events after class. When O'Connell took students to elementary schools to read to first graders, he made sure he was on the bus. In those situations, he thrived. O'Connell could see Geriante's potential, and he always wondered what he would make of his life. The junior simply had to make it through school. Geriante's life was cut short before he could realize that potential. On November 12th, authorities said, 18-year-old Calvin Williams approached Geriante's family's house across the street from Douglas Park in Champaign. Williams had previously stayed at the home, sleeping on the couch, according to a friend of Geriante. State's attorney, Julia Reitz, told the News Gazette that Geriante and Williams were in a social media dispute over a debt. Geriante was on the phone with relatives when police said Williams fired a hail of bullets into the house, hitting him in the chest. The 16-year-old was pronounced dead at Carle Foundation Hospital that night. Geriante's life came to an end before his numerous friends and family members would be able to see what came of it. 4 days later, the unimaginable loss was nearly multiplied for Lee. One son was dead, while another was in jail for trying to avenge his brother's death. It just floored me. Akyla West still texts Geriante's phone every so often. The two were close friends who had attended school together since the fourth grade. They'd talk on the phone every day while they were home from school during the pandemic, sometimes for more than an hour. She'd try to make sure he stayed on track with his schoolwork, and he'd make her laugh when she was feeling down. He'd joke that if they were both single at the age of 35, they'd have to get married. "He told me everything," she said. "He was good. He was sweet. He was innocent." The day after his death, she got an unusual message from Geriante's older brother, Camrion Wilson, telling her he loved her. Police said later that day, Wilson approached the apartment in Champaign where he believed Williams was living. They said he knocked on the door and pulled a loaded gun on the man who answered. Unknown to Wilson, behind the door was Champaign Police Sergeant Dave Griffith, who had also come looking for Williams. Griffith said he ordered Wilson to drop the weapon, which he promptly did. He was then arrested. Neither he nor Griffith had found Williams, who by then was on his way to Michigan. "He wasn't really thinking," West said of her son. "He was just hurt. He wanted to defend his brother." For over a week, Wilson sat in a jail cell, an unfamiliar environment for the 20-year-old. Wilson doesn't have the outgoing personality his younger brother did. "Instead, he's quiet and thoughtful," his mother said. "He has no criminal history either." The charges against him are serious. The gun in his possession was reported stolen, a Class 2 felony charge that carries a mandatory prison term of between 3 and 7 years. He was also charged with aggravated unlawful use of a weapon. When William Patterson called Wilson's cell phone in the days after the shooting, he was dismayed when Wilson's mother answered and gave him the news of her son's arrest. Patterson, a University of Illinois professor who focuses on melding hip-hop with education and leadership, had been working with Wilson for months on the Hip Hop Express Urban STEM Lab, which is essentially a bus with a high-tech recording studio. "It just floored me," Patterson said. "This is a young man who wanted something different from the community, and now he's in jail because he tried to avenge his brother's death. We know it was a poor choice, but to watch your brother get shot and killed, who handles that? How do you handle that? Nobody knows how to handle that type of emotion." Patterson was providing the mentoring he wishes he himself would have had right out of high school. After growing up near Douglas Park, where he still lives, he graduated early and didn't know what to do. He wound up in prison shortly after high school. When you're told for your whole life that you're not smart enough to go to the U of I, you start believing that stuff and you don't even try, said Patterson, who eventually earned his PhD in education policy studies from the U of I. You stop trying because people tell you you can't go, and you try to get a job, and that's not easy either. The resources in the community are not aligned with the need. People have not made black kids a priority, And since we have not made black kids a priority, they know if somebody cares about them or not. That's how I felt when I was 16. Patterson said he was walking in the park one day when he noticed Wilson, who had headphones on and was rapping with his cousin. Normally, he enjoys the solitude during his daily walks, but this time he decided to stop. I thought, these are the opportunities I'm looking for, being the educator that I am and what my scholarship focuses on, Patterson said. He is who I'm looking for. Wilson didn't let the chance to work with Patterson pass him by. Each week, he showed up for Hip Hop 101, where Patterson and other professors taught him the art of mixing music with high-tech equipment. He was totally diligent and all about it, Patterson said. He said, Dr. Patterson, if you could bring the bus at 10 o'clock, that would be better for me because I have to watch my sister from 9 to 10, and that way I can focus on the lesson. I was so excited because it showed a willingness and a desire to learn, and he wanted to structure his academic experience around his family responsibilities. 2 weeks ago, though, Patterson didn't receive a call from Wilson. Wilson spent the week after his brother died in prison. On Friday, he pleaded guilty to aggravated unlawful use of weapons and was released from jail, pending an early January sentencing. He could get probation of 1 to 3 years in prison. He could get probation or 1 to 3 years in prison. The judge told him his behavior between now and then will go a long way toward deciding his sentence. He touched my heart. Geriante was born 7 weeks early, on January 25, 2004. He was so tiny that his mother carried him around on a pillow for fear of breaking him. I knew he was going to be something else from that day forward. He was not going to sit in there and bake a little longer, Lee said. He was ready to get out. Geriante had a way of making her smile when she was down. He'd leave her notes in the morning every so often telling her to have a good day at work, and even when she scolded him, he'd put his arm around her and tell her she was beautiful and they'd both start laughing. Like O'Connell, Lee wondered what her son would be one day. He expressed interest in entering the medical field like she did when she got her certified nursing assistant license a year after his birth. West knew he enjoyed his woodworking class, so maybe he'd develop into some type of craftsman. O'Connell saw Geriante's potential on those trips to read to small children and when he volunteered at school. He saw how close he was with his 12-year-old brother, Dejan, and how much he adored his 2-year-old sister, Alaric, whom he towed around town so much that people assumed she was his daughter, his mother said. The good qualities were easy to see, and people in his life were excited to see what Geriante made of them. I really thought that, just with his personality, he would be somebody that, if he could make it through his educational experience, he was a kid who could eventually be a community leader for other kids, O'Connell said. He was so good with that younger population that I really thought, down the road, he would have made a great mentor to talk to kids about not doing things the way he did them sometimes. He just had that bubbly personality that people were drawn to. I just thought that he would have been capable of doing anything around younger kids, kind of helping them with their experiences, with the experiences that he had been through. You have those kids who you're close with and who you want nothing more than for them to be successful. And he was that kid for me. He touched my heart, and I was just really hoping that he could go on and do big things. Continuing with the next front page article is the opinion of Tom Kasich, titled, Record Local Turnout Helped Biden More Than Trump. Although President Donald Trump improved his showing ever so slightly in Champaign County in the 2020 election, President-elect Joe Biden got the greatest number of votes by any presidential candidate in the county's history, 57,028. That's almost 7,000 more than Hillary Clinton's 50,137 votes here 4 years ago, about 8,500 more than Barack Obama's total in his first presidential run in 2008, and almost 24,000 votes more than what George H.W. Bush had in 1988, the last time a Republican presidential candidate won Champaign County. Part of the reason for Biden's big number is the county's population growth and the enormous turnout on November 3rd, 75.2% or 96,137 of 127,848 registered voters. But the biggest factor is Trump's unpopularity in the county. While his total votes increased from 33,368 4 years ago to 35,278 this year, his share of the vote in the county only nudged to 36.93% from 36.42% 4 years ago. He remains one of the least popular presidential candidates in the county's history. The difference is even more stark in Champaign-Urbana, where Biden became the 9th consecutive Democratic presidential to win the cities, dating back to Michael Dukakis in 1988. Biden's CU total of 39,384 votes is almost double the 20,045 Dukakis collected 32 years ago, and Trump's 11,521 votes in Champaign-Urbana is far below the 20,058 Ronald Reagan got in 1984. In Champaign this year, Biden outpolled Trump by about 3-1, 26,731 to 8,799. In Urbana, Biden got 12,653 votes to Trump's 2,722. In the rural and suburban areas of Champaign County, Trump got 23,757 votes to 17,644 for Biden. That was closer than 4 years ago when Trump had 21,614 to 13,810 for Clinton. All of these numbers are official now that County Clerk Aaron Ammons and his staff completed the vote count last week and are getting ready to submit it to the Illinois State Board of Elections, which is scheduled to certify all results December 4th. The county results also showed that only about 27% of voters cast their ballots in person on Election Day. The greatest number voted in person, but before Election Day, at 43.5%, while about 29% voted by mail. That final number is worth noting because as of now, there is no similar vote-by-mail program for the spring municipal elections in Illinois. The big pandemic-driven vote-by-mail push this year, which authorized things like ballot drop boxes and vote-by-mail applications being sent to voters, sunsets on December 31st. Legislative leaders already agreed not to hold a veto session this month because of COVID-19, eliminating the possibility that an extension of the existing election law could be passed. Ammons said he hopes for a lame duck legislative session in December. They have to do something. We really, really, really want them to do this, he said. Ammons is required to start accepting vote-by-mail applications Wednesday, and he'll have a primary election in Urbana on February 23rd. All over the state, clerks and election commissions are asking, "What are we going to do now?" he said. "As of right now, if people want to vote by mail in the spring, they would have to call or write us to get the same application we sent out this year." That's ridiculous. The fall election went well, Ammons said, despite the pandemic and the record turnout. A retabulation of 6 randomly chosen precincts and an early voting site, as required by the State Board of Elections, turned up no changes in vote totals. "I feel good about that, although you really shouldn't get any changes from those machines," he said. "It feels good that it's all wrapped up now. I think it was a very successful election," Ammons said. "And I think it's especially important that so many people voted before the election, either by mail or in person, and felt safe doing it that way. Tom Kasich's column appears on Sunday in the News Gazette, and he can be reached at kasich@newsgazette.com. And continuing on the next page with Top of the Morning. Something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rossall. With a bowling ball, Brian Bezier is happy to crack 100, but give him a frozen butterball and he turns into the second coming of Earl Anthony. The 31-year-old special education teacher won Muhammad Seymour's annual Turkey Bowl competition Friday morning, beating 6 staff members and 1 student in a fun fundraiser that played out in high school's commons area. "I'm not a bowler," he said, "so I equate it to absolute luck. I just got some good bounces." Part of MS Positive Behavior Interventions and Supports Initiative, the Turkey Bowl consists of contestants winging frozen turkeys at pins for 4 frames. Some lob it, some go with a granny throw, some throw it as hard as they can. Assistant Principal Pat Bailey said, "It can get pretty nasty." Bezier got 3 strikes to win in his 3rd Turkey Bowl appearance. "Third time's a charm," he said. Students usually pack the commons the Friday morning before Thanksgiving break, making for a wild and woolly scene. Due to the pandemic, the crowd at this year's Turkey Bowl was limited to a handful of staff members. Students were able to watch on the school's YouTube channel, Bulldog TV. "I felt like a professional athlete," Bezier said, "with no fans in the stadium. The end result, a good time had by all, plus more than $1,300 raised via a first-time social media campaign that will help stock the school's mom's pantry." "The donations made it even better," Bezier said. "It was a real nice chance for the staff to get together. It provided some fun relief." Questions, comments, suggestions? Email Jim Rossow at jrossow@newsgazette.com. And on this day in history, in 1920, the Champaign County Council of the Boy Scouts of America was to meet at its headquarters on North Neal Street at the call of its president, University of Illinois football coach Robert Zupke. In 1970, Illinois failed to punch the ball across the 1-yard line, then stood hopelessly as the final seconds ticked away and gave Iowa a 22-16 win in Iowa City. In 2005, Champaign School Board members voted to issue working cash bonds to cover the district's shortfall and end to budget cuts that would threaten educational programs. At a special meeting, the 5 members attending voted unanimously to approve the plan to issue $6.3 million in bonds to generate $2.1 million in additional revenue each year for 3 years. The plan also included restructuring and extending existing high interest rate debt to reduce interest. International history. Today's highlight, on November 22, 1963, John F. Kennedy, the 35th President of the United States, was shot to death during a motorcade in Dallas. Texas Governor John B. Connally, riding in the same car as Kennedy, was seriously wounded. Suspected gunman Lee Harvey Oswald was arrested. Vice President Lyndon B. Johnson was sworn in as president. In local news from Rantoul Walmart, a woman who got in fight over not wearing mask gets probation. This is by Mary Shank. Urbana, a Gifford woman who got into a tussle at the Rantoul Walmart over not wearing a mask has been sentenced to 2 years of probation. Angela Sanford, 48, was also ordered to perform 100 hours of public service after pleading guilty Thursday before Judge Roger Weber to a single count of misdemeanor battery. In return for her plea, 3 more serious counts of aggravated battery alleging she struck others in a public place were dismissed. She was ordered to pay about $900 in fines and court costs. Rantoul police arrested Sanford on July 19th at the store 845 Broadmeadow Road after witnesses said she got into an argument and subsequent physical altercation with customers and employees about the fact that she and her husband were not wearing masks. Police said no one was seriously injured. Another local article in November 2019 home search, Champagne Man Gets Probation for Having Pot for Sale, by Mary Shank. A Champagne man who admitted he had cannabis intended for sale in his home about a year ago has been sentenced to 2 years of first offender probation. Should Jamie Maple Jr., 21, who listed an address in the 300 block of South Country Fair Drive, successfully complete his probation, he will have no record of a conviction. He pleaded guilty Thursday before Judge Roger Weber to possession with intent to deliver less than 30 grams of cannabis. Maple was arrested on November 8, 2019, after officers from the Champaign County Street Crimes Task Force did a court-authorized search of his apartment and found about 100 grams of cannabis, scales, packaging materials, cash, and 3 guns. More serious charges alleging he had a larger amount of cannabis for sale and that he possessed guns without a firearm owner's identification card were dismissed in return for his plea. And continuing with the crime report by the News Gazette, area police report the following activity in Champaign. The 500 block of Staunton Street, video game system and games stolen November 16th. 600 block of Dogwood Drive, a brick paver thrown through a window around 9:30 p.m. November 17th. The 500 block of Lawndale Drive, a bedroom window smashed with landscaping stone about 4 a.m. November 16th while residents slept. In the 400 block of East Clark Street, unknown thief entered unlocked apartment early November 18th and stole prototype cell phone under development. In the 600 block of South 5th Street, a homeless man arrested Wednesday for allegedly entering a man's apartment without permission and putting on his clothes. And the next article was a man who threatened to jump from bridge hospitalized without injury. He's got mental health problems. He's on his way to the hospital, Lieutenant Bruce Ramsayer said at 5:30 p.m. about the man who'd been on the overpass since about 2 p.m. His threats had prompted Illinois State Police, assisted by Champaign County Sheriff's deputies, this was by Mary Shank, to get help after he agreed to get in an ambulance that was to take him to the hospital. Officers confirmed he had no gun. It was a good police effort to help a man in trouble, Ramsayer said. The man apparently threatened to harm only himself. I-74 and Prosper were both closed in both directions during the ordeal for about 3 hours. Ramsayer said at least 6 trained negotiators worked with the man to convince him. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette for November 22nd, Sunday. Please stay tuned.